Hello, and welcome back to the Wise Athletes Podcast with Joe Lavelle and Dr. Glenn Winkle. On today's episode, number 46, I am delighted to be joined by Dr. Stephen Black, the CEO and owner of Rocky Mountain Human Performance Center. Dr. Black is an acknowledged leader in the fields of sports medicine, rehabilitation, fitness, and sports performance. And he has worked extensively with professional and amateur athletes in many sports, leveraging his holistic and integrative approach to improve performance. Stephen is himself a longtime high-level athlete who knows personally as well as professionally the challenges and opportunities available to us all for slowing the effects of aging with individualized programming for higher fitness and superior performance. Be sure to listen in as Stephen explains his philosophy of proactively addressing imbalances, deficiencies, and poor movement patterns to help older athletes become healthier and stronger while having fun. We cover the process Stephen follows with his clients to provide personalized training and nutrition plans to help them get to where they want to go from wherever they are. And he reviews some basic interventions that tend to apply to most people. Dr. Black is the real deal, and you are sure to learn something new. Let's talk to Stephen. Okay, Stephen, welcome to the Wise Athletes Podcast. I appreciate you taking some time to help us out.
It's a pleasure to be here, Joe. I appreciate the opportunity to talk with your listeners and exchange some information.
Awesome. Well, I'm sure you're going to be able to help us out. I know a decent bit about what you have done in the past to help people, professionals and amateurs. Let's just get started here by me repeating what you already know, which is that the focus of the Wise Athlete Podcast is older athletes and how they can improve athletic performance today and retain their athletic capability for a long time. You, as a physical therapist, athletic trainer, certified strength and conditioning specialist, you no doubt have a lot to tell us. But before we start, can you tell our audience a bit about your education and your background, how you came to know what you know?
Sure, happy to. I divide my background into two sides. First of all, the academic side, which gives me professional credibility, and then also my athletic side, which kind of gives me credibility in the athletic sports performance realm. So by education, I have my doctorate in sports medicine from Brigham Young University. I have an advanced certificate in emergency primary care. I'm also licensed as a physical therapist, also as an athletic trainer, and then I'm credentialed as a strength and conditioning coach through the National Strength and Conditioning Association. So that's really on the academic side. So I've taught at a variety of universities and colleges over the past 40 plus years, and also been involved with sports really from the professional level with a couple of professional football teams, right on down to working with the adolescent athlete in trying to prevent injury, treat injury, improve performance, et cetera.
Nice.
From the athletic side, I enjoyed an illustrious career as a gymnast. Was very successful in those endeavors on the collegiate level. We were Division I national championship champions my junior and senior year. So I have All-American status there. Then I transitioned into endurance sports, marathon, and then into triathlon, and enjoyed a nice career as an amateur, but relatively successful triathlete at all distances from sprint through Ironman events. And I've done the illustrious Ironman World Championship in Kona 6 times. So.
Wow.
Again, kind of on both sides there, I've got a little bit of credibility in the industry and bring that to bear on the patients and athletes I have the privilege to work with.
Well, that's great. Are you still competing? I'm sure that you're still athletic.
I'm still athletic from the lifestyle perspective. I feel as though I could compete at any time. I don't have anything on the agenda right now, but keep myself from a physical, mental perspective basically ready for the call.
All right. Well, thanks for that. As I was planning for today, I had a hard time narrowing down what I wanted to talk to you about because we've only got so much time together and can't talk about everything that you would possibly be able to help with. But what I zeroed in on was the topic of forestalling the aging process, how and why, because this is something that's on my mind really all of the time. I mean, even it's ultimately why I do this podcast. But no doubt it's on the mind of all older athletes who are not unaware of the fact that they are getting older. Here, before we're done today, I'd like to get to what's your top advice to the 40, 50, 60 plus year old athlete. I think we should start with your thoughts on the connection between health and fitness. And by that, I mean fitness and health today, as well as fitness and health into the future, a future that includes hopefully a long time being strong and active. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, this is certainly a topic that's very near and dear to my heart. And from the perspective of the aging athlete, I think we have to consider two sides of that. The first being you have a chronological age and then you have a physiological age. Yeah. Chronological age, the clock's ticking. We can't change that. But in regards to our physiological age, one of my observances in working with athletes and with patients on a daily basis is that the younger that they started participating in some form of athletic activity, the greater their health as their chronological age progresses. Now, certainly there's some deviations there relative to injury and also lifestyle changes and basically development of preventable disease. But in general, if you put money in the bank, so to speak, as a younger individual relative to your health and fitness, your longevity is significantly going to improve for the duration of your chronological age. So those are kind of some differences between, you know, really looking more physiologically versus chronologically. Huh. And I tend to discount the chronology with myself and also with the people that I talk to, because, that's inevitable. But what we can change is we can change the physiology, even though it the changes decrease in their magnitude as we age, nonetheless is with appropriate lifestyle changes and incorporation, we can affect our physiological age and live a longer, healthier, more joyous life.
Huh. Well, that's great. And it makes sense too. You know, one of the things that I have come up against myself in all of that I've been learning with the podcast is, while it's true that there are things that don't help and maybe even some things that injure my ability to stay athletic for a long time in my life, there's a lot of things that I can do. In fact, there's too many things for me to do. And so figuring out which things are going to have the biggest payoff kind of becomes one of the things I've got to figure out. And it's probably true that it's different for everybody. You know, as we have gotten older, I remember my own journey. You maybe remember yours, but it's probably true that everybody has had this journey of where they are consciously or unconsciously aware that they're not what they were, that something is changing, that they maybe they're, and maybe it's a threshold of body function goodness, right? You know, like how much muscle I've got or how much and where my fat stores are and maybe my level of regular pain, in addition to just the, you know, performance kinds of measures, which are more easily captured. But when this happens, I think that I know what happened to me, and I think probably happens to a lot of people, is that they react to it. They start making adjustments. They're compensating in some way. So, and some people compensate more than others. I mean, I'm sure there's even people who don't compensate at all, and they just accept these things as the natural, unavoidable consequences. I think we both would say that they are mistaken, that they can actually fight back. But anyway, people fight back in their own way, small or large. And so everybody is coming to this question of what would make the biggest difference for me from a different position, whether it is this physiological or chronological age or the things that they've done to compensate. So what is your approach then to figuring out what are the things that are going to have the biggest difference for an individual person?
I think from what you've just said, it's interesting, because if you look at, and I always make analogy to professional sports and some of the key coaches that have had influence in my lifetime. And it's always better to be proactive versus reactive. So if we have an incident in our life that creates a response to lead a healthier lifestyle, that's more reactive. And we're not going to be as successful there versus being proactive. So taking proactive as the opportune word here is, I think I would recommend that people really take a close look at their current level of health. And that involves basically seeking out an appropriate healthcare practitioner that can do blood values, can do physiological testing to look at your maximum heart rate, your VO2 max, although I tend to discount that a little bit, particularly as we age, but really get objective measures as to what your current level of health is. And then based on those objective measures, based on your goals, maybe some counseling as to the reasonableness of those goals, then embark on a journey to improve those statistics, basically, because numbers are objective. We have objective values. They're very safe. And then we can basically design an exercise prescription appropriate based on those values, based on appropriate goals. And then it becomes a matter of really two key words. One is consistency, and the other is moderation. And both of those become more important as we age. So it's consistency in activity, whether it be our nutrition plan, whether it be our supplement plan, whether it be our exercise prescription with a balance of cardiovascular and muscular strengthening and throwing in there mobility and flexibility, and then being very consistent with that and not thinking that we can change our lifestyle or become fit in one day. It's a journey, not a destination. So that would be kind of in an overview what my advice would be.
Yeah, that sounds good. I think that you've hit on a few things there, and I'd like to dive into them a little bit. But I want to put a placeholder into the word consistency. I've been taking a deep dive personally into that subject related to habit formation and breaking bad habits, that sort of thing. And so I want to come back and get your thoughts on how to find that consistency.
Sure.
That really does seem to make all the difference to get the benefits mm-hmm. that we're looking for. But you talked about some generalities in categories of things, and it really was sort of in response to my question of individual advice. And so what else could you do but talk in general, because we don't have a client here for you to advise. What I think would be useful to the audience listening in who may take your advice and go find somebody who could help them out, a practitioner, you know, they often are listening to these things to try to get some general advice that maybe applies to 80% of the people really well, and their intention will be to try some of the things out. So in your long experience in dealing with athletes, older athletes in particular, you know, I wonder if there are some things that commonly come up as really good things that they would do, things that have made a big difference to them.
Absolutely. Let's hit a couple of categories here. I mentioned earlier relative to basically getting blood work done to look at what's going on metabolically in your body. Break it down simple. What are some, three of the things that people can... First of all, quantify and then control, which is going to have a dramatic effect on their overall health. And those three are sugar, salt, and fat. But you have no idea what your levels are unless you get them tested. And basically that's an epiphany for people, because they say, oh my God, I had no idea that all of those or one of those was out of control and how much it's affecting me from a lifestyle perspective. So it's simple. Those three things, sugar, salt, and fat, you control those. And that's basically your weight management right there, regardless of what activity you're trying to participate in, what illness you're trying to recover from. And then if we look on the more on the physiological side, basically is if I determine from an objective area, basically what your maximum heart rate is, not your predicted heart rate, because what does that include? That includes chronological age. It basically throws the whole formula off. But if I assess you in a lab, looking at heart rate and looking at oxygen consumption, basically, I can determine what your maximum levels are, and then I can basically prescribe a dead-on formula that's pretty much going to guarantee you the results that you're looking for, whether you're looking at whatever it is, whether it's strength, endurance, flexibility, overall health, et cetera. So again, going back to those objective measures, and they're fairly easy to come by. There's a lot of people that are doing those assessments, so it's not hard to get them. But even on the physician level, if you go in for a stress test, they're not going to take you to max. They're going to take you to your predicted max, and that predicted max is off of age. Whether I've got a an Ironman champion on the treadmill or I have a 92-year-old cardiac patient, they're going to use age and they're not going to take you to max. So again, you've got to get the numbers to then design the program and then basically achieve the success you're looking for.
And so when you say max heart rate and they're using age, are you talking about some like formula that has like a number like 220 minus your age or something like that?
Yes. Yeah, there's the standard formula that's 220 minus your age, and that gives you your max predicted heart rate. And then typically a professional would tell you that you don't want to exceed 60% of that. So for most people, that's a pretty low level of exercise, which is
60%. Yeah, that's awfully low.
You're inactive. If you're very sedentary, you may get a cardiovascular effect off of that low a heart rate with activity. But for the average person, it's not high enough.
Yeah, that's sort of like a recovery workout.
There you go. It's safe.
Yeah.
But not fit.
Right. Okay. And when you were talking about sugar and salt and fat, were you talking about getting them measured in your blood?
Yeah, just a standard blood panel that's going to look at, from a sugar perspective, we're going to look at your glucose, your total glucose, and then when you're going to look at your A1C.
Right.
And then obviously salt, that's sodium, and then fat, basically that's your lipids. So that's your total lipids, that's your high-density cholesterol, your low-density cholesterol, et cetera. So again, looking at those three things, sugar, salt, and fat, we can basically give you an appropriate prescription to get those into the appropriate levels.
I see. And doing so would be a matter of mostly diet, or would there be other things associated with that?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question, because we're really, from a professional perspective, only scratching the surface as to the importance and the influence that nutrition has on our health. So I tend to talk in nutrition versus diet, because diet indicates basically short-term success for long-term failure. So we look at it as nutrition, and basically we're fueling the body like we, you know, whether we're charging a Tesla, whether we're fueling a Formula One car, is basically we want the optimal fuel that's going to allow for optimal performance, irregardless of how you define performance. So yes, looking at those numbers and modulating those numbers through nutrition is going to be a factor relative to healthy longevity.
Okay. I'm interested in the nutrition area. So let me ask you another question on that. When you're advising people on nutrition, do you take into consideration what they do for their athletics? And let me be more direct, like a person who does criteriums versus a person who does Grand Fondos, you know, 100-mile Grand Fondos. I mean, does their fuel needs come into consideration in your thinking around nutrition?
Absolutely. So the initial focus is to basically set the baseline, looking at their metabolic numbers via the blood test, et cetera, but then also knowing what they do as an athlete, because you're going to manipulate your carbohydrates, proteins, fats, basically electrolytes, et cetera, based on not just their activity, but where they are in their annual plan relative to that activity. So are they in a building phase? Are they in a competitive phase? Are they in a recovery phase? So it gets very detailed, specific to the athlete, relative to manipulating the calories and the basically the types of foods that they're eating. And a lot of that starts really with a food diary. So with the athletes that I really probably 70 to 80% of the patients athletes that I work with, they do an initial week food diary and then a monthly food diary. And then I analyze that. And the interesting thing here is science tells us and really evidence tells us that people migrate to about 47 different foods. And if you try to give them a nutritional plan outside of those 47 foods, you're not going to be very successful.
You mean they won't comply?
Yeah, they won't comply. We're creatures of habit. So they may do it for a week or a month, but then they're going to fall off the wagon and circle back to what they enjoy eating. So you learn how to manipulate the foods that they're eating with some minor suggestions and tweaks, but it's a nutrition plan. It's not a diet. And as I say, it's a periodized plan based on where they are, level of performance, and what particular period of their training and performance they're in.
I see. So we're talking about at least a couple of things. One is the amount of calories to balance with the amount of workload that they've got in their training plan plus their lives, I suppose.
Right.
And then also the macros amount of, mm-hmm. I mean, from a fuels point of view, we're talking about whether it's carbohydrates or fats, mm-hmm. and the higher intensity work is going to need the carbohydrates, but lower intensity work could probably use any fuel.
Right.
Okay. And protein, I guess, is the other macro that's not often talked about as a fuel, but is more for recovery or building the body to be able to adapt to the training that it's under. What are your thoughts about protein volume?
Oh boy, is that a nice segue. And I love talking about protein because people really under discuss protein and they underutilize protein. But we need protein for all phases of activity, whether it's performance or whether it's recovery. And some people just don't have that understanding relative to the importance of protein as an essential building block. Because if we, again, try to keep this simple, is that really in all phases of performance, whether it's training, whether it's competition, whether it's recovery, we're breaking down and rebuilding. That rebuilding process is all about protein. So although we may change the percentages relative to protein, carbohydrate, and fat, we still need protein. And we need to make sure that we're getting a complete protein. And the reason I say that, and I'm not opposed to a plant-based diet, but a plant-based diet, it's more difficult to balance a complete protein because most plants are incomplete proteins. But if we put a variety of them together, then we have a complete protein. But the non-active individual, needs maybe a half to three quarters of a gram of protein per kilogram per day. If we take an active athlete that's working out on a daily basis, anywhere from 1 to 3+ hours, then that goes way up. Then we're looking at 1.5 to 2, maybe 2.2 grams per kilo of body weight. And when I have people do the math, and I ask them basically, okay, what'd you eat today? They're protein deficient. People don't get enough protein, particularly as they age, is they just don't get enough protein for a variety of reasons, but they don't. So I spend a lot of time talking about protein, recommending different protein sources from a supplement perspective, as well as from a whole food perspective.
Great. I started off back as far as high school as a lifting weights, trying to become the next Arnold Schwarzenegger. And so I have always been a proponent of protein for myself. And I have found that it also is useful in other ways too. It's satiating. So it's easier for me to manage my calorie intake But one thing that is sort of new for me, I want to get your thoughts on it related to protein, is that I understand that as we get older, our ability to process the protein that we eat, to use it as building blocks for our body, diminishes. It goes down. And so we need more protein, is what I read, as we get older, just to get the same benefit for the same level of repair that we need when we were younger. So the amount of protein we should eat, according to this advice that I read, would go up. Even if everything else stayed the same, it would go up just because we're getting older and we're not as good at utilizing the protein that we eat. Is that true?
That's true. And just from two factors here, really, that we need to keep in mind is one, yes, as we age, our ability to digest and assimilate protein gets more difficult. So eating more protein will enhance that process. The other that we need to consider is basically, you've probably heard the term leaky gut syndrome. And basically, the majority of people, because of their poor diets, primarily, secondarily, because of medications that they may be on, creates a leaky gut environment, which increases inflammation in the body, which decreases your ability to absorb protein.
All right. So even more reasons to have a nutrition plan that is good for your body and your gut so that you're getting the value that you need out of the protein that you're eating and other benefits.
And one other point that we probably should make here relative to protein and really the balance between protein and carbohydrate is there's an optimal relationship there that was really discovered by an avid cyclist and an exercise physiologist down in Colorado Springs by the name of Ed Burke. You may have heard Ed's name and read some of his literature, but he was the first one to do the research to look at the balance of carbohydrate and protein. So basically, in order to absorb one molecule of protein, you need 3 grams of carbohydrate. So it's a 1-to-3, 1-to-4 relationship. And not that I'm advertising for them, but the other one that ascribes to this and has picked this up is Gatorade. And they have a tremendous amount of literature available, non-biased literature, that indicates this 1-to-3, 1-to-4 relationship, not only for a performing athlete, but really for the general active individual.
Okay. Well, and I assume that works just as well by combining foods into a meal as it would from a product that was manufactured to have the right ratios.
I'm all about real food. Let's start with real food. If we need to supplement, we can, but let's start with real food.
Right, right. Yeah, and you had talked about using plant-based only foods as a way of living that a lot of people do, but it makes it harder to get the right amount of protein. I have a personal experience with that. I had heard that a plant-based diet would make me recover better. And recovering is one of the things that gets harder as I get older for lots of reasons. No doubt one of them is I don't sleep as well. And, you know, that's recovery tool number one. But anyway, so I did try it. For a while, I tried it. And whether it was a placebo effect or not, I did feel like I recovered better. Like, I had less soreness in my body. I was really quite pleased with it. The problem that I had was, and I was tracking, I was using, I can't think of the name of it, but one of those food tracking products. And it was one that really did a very detailed tracking of micro and macronutrients. And so I was able to see how much protein I was getting. And I just was not getting anywhere close to enough. So I had to supplement with plant-based protein powders just to get it in. And I found that I was just doing protein shakes all the time. I was kind of disgusted by it. And so that's ultimately why I went away from it. I can't actually say that I did any sort of study to say that I actually walked away from the recovery benefit or not. I did feel like I had gotten a benefit, but I don't remember feeling like I lost it. So I'm just not sure. But yeah, it was tough to get enough protein. So anyway, just to echo what you were saying.
Yeah, and I think the reason that you felt better and possibly your quality of sleep improved is because, as I said earlier, is the plant-based proteins singularly aren't complete. So they break down faster. They break down easier than a complete protein. But by combining enough incomplete proteins, you end up with complete protein assimilation. It just, the breakdown process is easier, less taxing on the system, therefore basically more energy for other things, and then also a better quality of sleep because you're not revved up.
Ah, okay. Well, that was interesting.
Yeah.
I want to talk about this question of behavior change and driving consistency. But before I leap into that, was there anything else on this general findings of what the older athletes tend to need that give them the biggest benefit?
Well, I think we'll cover that when you go into that next topic. But I think this would be a good time to put in a plug that the aging individual, athlete or not, really needs to do weight-bearing resistance exercise from a maintenance of muscle strength, but more so from a preservation of bone health is concerned. There needs to be some resistance training incorporated in that, and basically it needs to be weight-bearing resistance exercise to be most effective to maintain that your overall health, your balance, your coordination, your strength and your bone integrity.
Okay. And so I guess, I mean, obviously if we're talking about cycling or running, then we're talking about people who are not, they're certainly not getting much work done on their upper body, but also particularly with cycling, they're not getting a very balanced workout on all of the front and the back of their the muscles that are being exercised. And so then they're going to end up with some imbalances over time if they're not doing it. You know, cross training is what we used to call it. But I guess the other way to do it is to hit the gym, or, you know, even if it's body weight and band work, maybe there's, it's at least, and mobility type things, it helps to work out the imbalances. Is that what you're saying?
Most definitely, you know, and those activities that you address there, you know, whether you're doing body weight, whether you're using bands, et cetera, will more or less maintain. They won't necessarily build. The one important thing that they do, obviously, is they do work balance, mobility, agility, et cetera. But, you know, you talked about runners and cyclists. In my experience in working with those individuals, and when I try to incorporate resistance training, weight training, basically they say, well, you know, I never work my legs because they get worked when I run and I ride. Well, they're only fooling themselves. They're a little delusional there, because their performance actually as a runner or a cyclist obviously would improve if they were doing total body resistance. Basically what we term now is the popular phrase is HIIT training, high intensity interval training, using weights to get the best bang for your time, basically.
Well, and I guess what they're also saying, well, anyway, I can imagine what I might say. It would be, well, gosh, you know, if I'm exercising my legs, now my legs are tired. How am I going to do my, you know, my cycling workout now if I'm already got tired legs? What would you say to that?
Well, my response to that is that basically everybody needs an annual plan, and that'll kind of bring us into basically consistency and accountability, so you stay consistent with the program. But, you know, certainly there are times when you're spending more time on the bike versus spending time in the weight room, and then there are times when you need to be more in the weight room than you need to be you know, on the bike.
Right.
So it's a periodized plan. If people are doing the same things all the time, year round, basically they're working against themselves because the body is lazy and it's going to compromise to basically the consistency of what you're doing.
Sure. And I guess you can go down to wherever the cyclists hang out and you can see them standing and the ones who've got that sort of rolled forward, hunched over look, those are the ones who are not taking your advice, right?
Yeah. The ones with the olive oil arms.
There you go.
They need to spend a little more time in the weight room.
Well, I think that this really takes me to back to that question of the things we should do, not just for our performance in our sport, but because I want to be a strong, healthy person for a long time. And that is different. I mean, it's related to, but different from how can I get faster on the bike?
Well, and I'm not necessarily plugging these people, but two very interesting reads for you or your readership that kind of speak to what you're saying there is one is John Jerome, who's a sports psychologist and also a high-ranking or was a high-ranking tennis player, wrote a book called The Sweet Spot in Time. And that talks about the psychology of performance, but also preparation for optimal performance. And the other more current one is You're Too Old to Die Young by Dan Zeman. And Dan basically talks about athletes particularly making that transition from competition to lifestyle and basically switching that mindset less on performance, but more on preservation of lifestyle. So yes, taking it out of the context of performance and then looking at what do I need to do on a daily basis to optimize my health, whether it be from a nutritional perspective, whether it be balancing my cardiovascular strength, flexibility, mobility, agility. What are the things I need to do there on a daily basis to balance that, not from a performance perspective, but from a lifestyle perspective?
Great. I'll dig up links to those and stick those in the show notes to make it easier for people to find them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, just getting back to this question of wanting to be a healthy, strong person for as long as I possibly can, which means for a lot longer than I have so far. The idea is that by exercising regularly, say riding my bike, doing cardiovascular exercise, I am already compensating for the fact that otherwise my life is pretty sedentary. I sit at a desk a lot. I drive places a lot instead of walking there. And so it's good. I'm getting my heart exercised and compensating for the fact that otherwise I'm probably too sedentary. But there are other things in my lifestyle that riding a bike doesn't compensate for, like sitting in a chair for hours a day. Even if I'm getting up, you know, regularly like I'm supposed to, it's still mostly sitting down. I'm not standing most of the day. I'm almost the entire day, I am lying in a bed or sitting in a chair. And cycling is not offsetting that. It is not counterbalancing that. So I've got to do something or I become chair-shaped.
Correct. Absolutely.
I mean, I assume that that's what you're getting at when you're talking about people have got to do some resistance exercise. Is that right?
That's right. But I think in order to be able to do that, and relative to what you just said in your lifestyle, is one of the key words that people are using today, and there's a lot of information out there relative to it, is mindfulness. And basically being aware of your current situation and being aware that you need to change that frequently. Basically, the body adapts to chaos better than it adapts to a sedentary being. So if I'm like you are, okay, we've been at this for 45 minutes. When we're done with this, we need to move.
Yeah.
And we need to be prepared to move. So it's being in the moment. It's being mindful of our overall health. But what are we doing at the moment to preserve that health? So mindfulness has gotten very important. You know, same as we talked about, we're only scratching the surface with nutrition. We're only scratching the surface as it relates to the mind and the power of the mind and the plasticity and the malleability of the brain. So, but that's for a whole nother podcast there.
Yeah, really. Well, in fact, maybe that's a nice segue into this consistency question. how do we help ourselves, you and I, and how do you help your clients to adopt the behaviors that you tell them that they should do? I mean, I suppose it would be nice if people just did what you said.
Yeah, wouldn't that be easy?
You know, welcome to the real world. You know, people, especially the older athlete, they've been around a long time and they've had a long time to develop habits and routines that they're used to. Even if they're not good for them, they're just accustomed to doing it, and making a change is hard.
Yes.
So what are your thoughts on that? How do you help people? How do you help yourself to be consistent by making behavior change, which would be doing more of the good thing and less of the bad thing?
Well, I think there's a variety of ways there. You mentioned myself. What do I do? Is, you know, I'm blessed to be able to deal with the people that I deal with on a daily basis. So basically, they're my motivation, my inspiration to maintain my own health. Number one, if I don't, I'm not able to render the types of treatments that I do to them. However, the individuals coming in their various stages of health, they're basically mirrors. They're saying, well, what am I doing here? Or what could I be doing so I don't end up like that? Or what are they doing that's working for them that I might be able to adapt? So that kind of keeps me accountable. The other is through the pandemic, and fortunately in this technological age that we're living in, there's so many different devices, apps, et cetera, that can hold us accountable. Basically, our watch reminds us to breathe or take time to breathe. We can do an EKG on our watch or on our smartphone. So taking advantage of technology, setting reminders, it's time to move, it's time to drink 8 ounces of water, it's time for a meal, et cetera, is utilizing technology to your advantage versus what everybody plays it up to as a disadvantage. So I find out with the patients that I deal with, I find out basically what's the best method to assist them. Is it basically setting reminders in Outlook because they're on the computer doing emails for X number of hours per day? Is it somebody like you that has a smartwatch that basically says, it beeps at you and says it's time to breathe, it's time to move? Mm-hmm. And then at the end of the day, basically you're getting an account of that, counting of that, so you're accountable to that that prescription, so to speak.
Yeah, you've mentioned a couple of times in using data, try to get hard data, whether it's from your blood or from your food journal or from your smartwatch, to know where you are so that you can set goals and then you can see where you've gotten to. But also the data in terms of just activity, kind of process metrics of are you doing the things, reminders to do them, and then at the end of the day, did you do them? And I guess that there's, I mean, obviously that's useful stuff. I do a lot of that myself. And what that sets you up to do, just thinking that out loud here, that sets you up to then say, you know, I'm having a hard time with this. I'm not doing it. I'm not getting better. And why is that? Well, because I'm not doing it. I'm not doing the work. I can't, I know I should do it. I keep meaning to, and I'm not. And so then that at least then opens the door to, I've got some block in my life that is keeping me from doing that. And, you know, and if you can figure out some way that's better than just that general getting data for those particular things.
Yeah. The other piece we haven't mentioned here, and to my fault, is basically, as I've always been a solitary athlete, my sports have been individual sports, and I tend to be more a private solo person. Whereas that's contrary to the norm. Is human nature is to be engaged. It's basically to be engaged with the herd, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So basically creating a herd based around your goals. So basically, if I've got a workout buddy that I'm supposed to meet at 6 a.m. to get my workout in, I don't want to disappoint them versus just disappointing myself. So I'm going to be sure that I get up and get there to motivate them so they can motivate me. So the pandemic has done a great job with that, because it's forced the development of things such as the Peloton communities, and Strava is blown off the wall. And why is that? Because it's group. It's group participation, and you're accountable to the group.
Yeah. So the social aspect of not just having fun, but also then the commitment to doing it. And frankly, I have tended to become more solitary, as you've described. But when I was younger, that was how I developed my habit of going to the gym, was that I always had a buddy who I'd go with. And you just didn't want to say, oh, I don't feel like it today. Even though it was true that you didn't feel like it, you always were like, oh, right. Okay.
Sure.
Then you go, all right, well, good.
Well, and then I think two other important points here, because they give resource to the listeners, really, is one of the individuals that I follow routinely is Simon Sinek. And I look at Simon Sinek with his leadership podcast, and really a benefit of that, and really a quality of an individual as a leader, basically is to carry others along. You know, it's not you standing up beating your chest that I'm the best and follow me. It's basically it's lead by example. The other side of that, if we look at the term coach, basically it comes from the Hungarian stagecoach, which is to carry people along. So to find some level of coaching in your life that helps you, because we all like to help, so it brings others along, but at the same time, we're helping ourselves. And then the other kind of philosophy I ascribe to really is the teams, the SEALs. And basically, they have a phrase that one is none, two is one. So again, you said it, having a buddy to meet at the gym. So one is none, two is one. And again, we need that support, that accountability, et cetera, to allow us to achieve our goals. And then we can feel good from that perspective, because we've helped somebody else. We've nurtured and mentored somebody else.
I had never heard that before. That's a great saying. One is none, two is one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that can be valuable, whether you're talking about hiring a coach to help you, because your coach is your buddy who is providing accountability, sort of enforcing your accountability. But you could also get that kind of help just from a friend who you're helping each other.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. All right. Well, so why don't we try to summarize here what you're saying is, back to the beginning, we were talking about forestalling this aging process and things that people should do, you were saying, in order to do that well, to try to separate the chronological age from their physiological age. And you had talked a lot about, I think we have two buckets. One is the process stuff, you know, when you talked about getting data and things like that. And then we could talk about the actual tasks that people should engage in or find a way to tailor to themselves so that they are doing the things that are going to help them to push off their physiological age or slow it down as much as possible. Which do you want to start with?
Well, we can start with set the base, so to speak, is basically find out where you are today. You know, where am I today? And then from a goal setting perspective, what are my goals? And then with that, what are the tools I need to assess where I am today? And then what are the tools to take me to the goals that I've established?
Right. So tools like getting blood tests, like heart rate monitor, what else?
Yeah, basically, if you break it down in there, is we're looking at get a standard blood profile done that gives you your numbers relative to your metabolic health, and then look at your physiology, your heart rate, your oxygen consumption, et cetera. And that's a standard treadmill test to get those numbers to allow you to design a safe and effective exercise prescription.
Okay. So that's the tools and the data for figuring out where you are. It also helps you to figure out which of the many things you could do that would help you, which things will be the most important for you, and sort of maybe filling in your gaps or strengthening your foundation. And then in terms of the activities that they could do that probably apply to most people, what are those things?
I'd take a step back here, and I'd be remiss if I didn't say basically as the individual is looking to kind of evaluate and set their plan, one of the things we need to consider basically is their past history. And what types of injuries, illnesses, surgeries, et cetera, have they had? And what are the precautions, modifications, et cetera, that we need to consider to, again, design a safe and effective program for the individual? And then basically getting into the psychological side of it also is what are their motivators? How do they best respond? Is it, you know, with a buddy? Is it with an app? Is it what's the best motivator to keep them compliant to the program? And then routine assessment, reassessment. So you can, again, basically manage your improvements, where are you falling off, and then where are we getting you back on track?
Great. But in terms of the actual activities for improving health and also extending that improved health for a long time, I think you had spoken about a number of things that people could do. And in general, it's do a well-rounded set of things, mm-hmm. because that's what we want to be, as a well-rounded, healthy person. Because a lack of health usually is not you're unhealthy in every way. Usually you're unhealthy in one way or right. a couple of ways. Right. And all of that other ways that you are healthy, it doesn't do you any good because your back hurts or, whatever it is. So this well-rounded set of activities, if you're doing a lot of cycling, you're probably doing enough of that. Maybe you're even, and if a time is a constraint, maybe you should do less of that so you can do some of these other things that would include, you had said, resistance training. What else mm-hmm. would it include?
Well, really is basically you want a balance of cardiovascular activities. So whether it's the heart doesn't know what you're doing. Basically, it knows it needs to meet a demand. So whether I'm snowshoeing, whether I'm hiking, whether I'm cycling, swimming, running, walking, great activity. The heart doesn't matter. It's just the heart doesn't know. It just knows it needs to meet the stimulus. So okay. A variety of cardiovascular activities.
Things that get your heart rate up.
Yeah, get your heart rate up to what those levels are that we assessed are appropriate for you to stay healthy and improve your cardiovascular condition, and also burn appropriate calories to basically stave off cardiovascular disease.
And so, with some balance between really high heart rates and modestly elevated heart rates.
Yeah, typically what I prescribe people to do is, if I look at a week plan, is they're doing one day more of intervals where it's repetitive increasing and recovering relative to the heart rate. Do one mid-distance, and we basically decide on what that distance is, but one mid-distance sustained heart rate at somewhere between 60 and 80%. And then anything else that I do from a cardiovascular perspective on that particular week is all at recovery rate. It's at that 55 to 60%. That's a very safe, effective cardiovascular plan.
Great. It just occurs to me that we really didn't talk much about recovery. You, of course, reminded me of it here when you talked about that the bulk of the work probably at a lower rate of exertion. And part of that is because they're either doing recovery because it's a very low level of effort and essentially they're just doing it in order to get the blood flowing to help with the recovery, or it's a low enough endurance type pace that it's giving them some cardiovascular benefit, but it is not adding to the burden of recovery for them.
Right.
What would you say, in addition to planning ahead for recovery, what are some of the other things that you have people do so that they can recover appropriately so that they can then get the benefit of their training?
Well, the more we age, both from a physiological and a chronological perspective, we need to consider that recovery more. So basically, when we're looking at recovery for a beginning athlete, we would look at a 1-to-3 ratio. So basically, it's one dose high intensity, 3 doses of recovery. So it's 3 times the time relative to recovery. Well, that holds true as we age. So getting up into the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, we need at least triple the time to recover versus the duration of the activity. And that's extremely important because we need that recovery time. Otherwise, we're either going to get injured or we're going to have some type of a catastrophic event. So the recovery time becomes more important as we age. The phrase that I use there is, I'm as good once as I ever was. So, you know, basically more rest versus high intensity, long duration activity.
Excellent. Was there anything else that we would add to this general activities that people could engage in that would contribute toward this idea of connecting their fitness improvements to their health improvements and maintenance?
Well, I think the keys really are balancing spirit, mind, and body. And then basically a nice combination, robust combination of physical activity, mentally stimulating activity, rest and recovery, and joy. I think if you balance those components in your lifestyle, is you're going to have a healthier, happier longevity.
I think that's great, especially that last word. You know, if you don't enjoy it, you're not going to keep doing it.
That's right.
Enjoyment has got to be one of the cornerstones of consistency.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, awesome. Well, thank you so much, Stephen, for helping us out here. Is there some way that people should look for you if they want to know more about you or they want to be able to reach out to you? Is there some way you would like people to be able to find you on social media or something like that?
Sure, appreciate that. Best thing and easiest way to contact me or to gain more information is just go to my website, which is RockyMountainHPC.com. If you're interested in contacting me, you can do that through that home page because there's a link that allows you to put in your information. I review those daily and I get back to people within 24 hours. So website's always the best.
Fantastic. Well, Stephen, thank you again. You have a great day.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Alrighty, bye-bye. Thank you so much for listening in to my discussion with Dr. Stephen Black of Rocky Mountain Human Performance Center about the connection between fitness and health for the older athlete and the process he uses to help athletes find a path from wherever they are to where they want to be. You can find more information about Dr. Black in the show notes. And while you're there, you can sign up to take a free fitness practices assessment, send us a question to address on the podcast, see all of our episodes, subscribe to our podcast, and you can sign up for our newsletter. If you are on social media and enjoyed this episode, please post about it. That'd be a great help. Thanks again.